Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from PUC examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
Well, I just realized yesterday that it was the 10-year anniversary of my TV show, Songstage, airing for the first time. And I don't expect you to know anything about my history. If you've listened to the show a lot, you may have heard us mention it. We don't talk about it a whole lot. But when old Roy was on the show quite a bit, he was my business partner when we were doing these TV shows, and we would talk about it sometimes. But Songstage was a show on PBS that aired from 2016, so 10 years ago right about now is when it first started, through 2018. We ended up doing two seasons of it, which I realized in doing that show how much of a miracle it is to get a movie made or a TV show made, let alone two seasons of a show, let alone that it actually aired somewhere. Because, man, people are in the grind in the industry, as they say, trying to get stuff made. That's why you hear a lot of Hollywood actors and stuff just say, oh, yeah, are you working? Especially with podcasts now. You can listen to their behind-the-scenes stuff, and they just want to be working. They just want to have jobs. And it's the way the industry works because it's just so hard to get stuff made. So anyway, 10 years ago, Songstage aired, and it was a show about taking a songwriter who had something, just like a basic version of a song, and then watching as we, as our Songstage team, kind of developed it. I was the host of the show and creator, and I would walk them through these different phases where they'd have musicians that would kind of beef the song up, suggest things about it. And these musicians we had were unbelievable because they could do any genre of music. We picked people from all over the place to do different genres. And then we'd throw them against each other at the end of every episode and have a live auditorium audience vote right there on the spot on who goes on and who goes home. So we didn't have any control over. It was actually a pretty fun show. Not super high production value, but for what it was a pretty good accomplishment. And we got it into most of America from 2016 through 2018 on PBS. But if you don't know how PBS works, I will enlighten you. Not that TV matters anymore, right? I mean, does TV really matter? But this was still 10 years ago where it was still a pretty big deal. And so to get a network show on a major network, NBC or CBS or whatever, Fox, you have to have the network pretty much doing the show. You can't make something and then just sell it to them. It just doesn't work that way. They have to be involved pretty much from the get-go. And then once they like the show, they push it out nationally to all their affiliates, and all their affiliates pretty much have to run it. I've realized more recently that the bigger you are as an affiliate, like Sinclair has a lot of affiliates, a lot of markets, and they said no to Jimmy Kimmel. They just said, no, we're not going to run it. So they actually have more power than I thought they did at the time. But for the most part, the network's going to say, here's your main programming, and the affiliates are going to run it. And they run it pretty much at the exact same time across the country. You know, different time zones, but same time across each time zone. Well, PBS is the opposite, and it's by design. They do have national programming. They'll have their national, like Downton Abbey was huge at the time. I'm sure Antiques Roadshow is still going now. But these are the big shows that were on PBS. But the problem is each affiliate in each market, they didn't have to run it. They did. They always, run the big shows, but they could run them whenever they wanted. So there was no real uniformity to anything. You know, one station might run it at 7 o'clock on Sunday. Another station might run it at 9 o'clock on Sunday. Another station might run it on Wednesday or Monday, you know, whatever their big shows are. So there was no uniformity to their programming. In fact, most of their quote-unquote prime time programming was their children's stuff. This would have been in the days of still probably Sesame Street at that time, Daniel Tiger, and some other stuff that they've pivoted to since they don't have Sesame Street anymore. So PBS was weird, and so you couldn't just sell it to PBS National, our show. You had to go market by market and talk to each market manager, and they were all busy, and they didn't necessarily want to talk to you that bad because they had a glut of people trying to sell them programming, but ours was very unique. There wasn't a lot like that on PBS. What we ran into, which we didn't expect, was that we had 8 episodes of each season. So 4 hours of programming for season 1, 4 hours for season 2. We didn't have them ready back to back, but we did have them eventually. And finding the slot to air it, even if the programmer liked it, it was tough because they'd say, well, I got this cooking show over here that has 100 episodes. What am I going to preempt that to run you guys for 8 weeks for a half an hour? And we were like, yes. And sometimes they did because they liked the show enough. But it was just hard to find programmers willing to do that. Ultimately, we were persistent enough that we did get it into, I think, the way that we always talked about it was that we got it in front of about 40 million people. That doesn't mean that's how many people watched it, but that's how many people could potentially watch it based on the markets that we were in, which is pretty dang good overall after 2 seasons. But ultimately, the reason I'm telling you this story is not to tell you the history of Songstage. I told you a little bit about how the show works, but I realized yesterday as I was thinking about this that I never told this story before about the show, because it involves litigation, and I wasn't even, you know, within the last few years, I was like, I don't think I should tell that. But I think we're far enough past it now that it doesn't really matter anymore. So in 2016, our show started airing at about this time, I think. And right afterwards, we learned of a new show coming to, I think, Fox, might have been NBC, that was almost the same premise as our show. It was from Adam Levine of Maroon 5 and The Voice fame. He was the creator of the show. I think he was on it. And it was about songwriters. And they kind of did the same thing where they would take somebody who had a little bit of a song and they'd put them in front of somebody and they'd work with them. It was kind of boring, though. Ours was kind of fast-paced. And I did a lot of joking, obviously, because that's what I do. And I'd do these interviews with them that made no sense. You know, we talk about their song, but then I'd do this ridiculous sort of just skits and stuff like it was Conan O'Brien. And just made the show kind of crazy and fast, and, you know, people enjoyed it. We weren't high budget, but we did what we could. And then he comes out with this show that I watched, and I think it was later in the year that it started airing, maybe even the next year. And we were like, oh, man, this is either really good for us or really bad for us. I don't really know which way. Oh, Songland. I just looked it up on NBC. And it ran, let's see, if I can find it real quick, 21 episodes, so not a whole lot more than we did, from 2019 through 2020. So they definitely were after us. So here's the story and the reason I'm telling this. At the time, my business partner, who had invested a lot of money in Songstage, was like, well, the hell with this. Songland isn't going to come along and steal the premise of Songstage. We've been out longer than he has, which we had. So he contacted a lawyer and said, hey, do we have a case here? And we found an entertainment lawyer that said, slam dunk case. You guys are going to be freaking rich. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of exciting. Except I felt uneasy about it. And I don't know why. Maybe it was just because I don't like lawsuits. I don't like the whole world of lawsuits. I think they are vastly abused. And in this case, I didn't really think Adam Levine had stolen our idea. He just had a similar idea and a similar name to a show. But legally, we had staked the ground first, so I knew we had a case. And so I said to my business partner, I said, you know, we can do this, but I just feel weird about it. I don't think that he stole it from us. I think we just beat him to the same idea. And he said, yeah, that's true, but we have a legal case, and don't you want to make the money back that we've invested in the show? I couldn't tell him no. He had put too much money into the show for me to come along and go, I just have a weird feeling in my gut about it. I said, you do what you need to do. I will be a party to it, But I just feel weird about it. But, you know, you got to make your money back. And if this is the way you have to make it back, then okay. And the lawyer, I remember a phrase this guy said. It was something, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't in the room when this happened, but he told me secondhand. He said the lawyer went, "Here we go. We're going to sue Adam Levine." And I was like, okay, that's a little bit too enthusiastic. But he was going to get his name on the map. And I'm like, and maybe this is why I feel so weird about it. Ultimately, what happened with that case was, and I think this is a God thing, because I couldn't tell him no. I couldn't say, no, don't get the money back that you spent on the show. It just wasn't my place to do it. But ultimately, when they went to file the lawsuit, they found one key thing that was going to kill us. And we ended up not filing it at all. They had registered the copyright for Songland 1 week before our first episode aired. Now, we still had a case in that we had the show before they had that copyright. And I think we had copyrighted our name before they had copyrighted theirs. But the case got super weak because we couldn't prove that they had seen our show before registering their copyright for their show. And the whole thing fell apart. And I was always sad about that for my friend who had sunk a lot of money into Songstage. And, you know, I guess there was a part of me that was like, I wouldn't mind being rich. But I just didn't like the way that it was happening. And I always viewed that as like God's, you know, we could have started that show running on a certain PBS station that was the sponsor station, Central Illinois, really at any time. And so we happened to start at that date, which was 1 week too late for that lawsuit to work. And I said, okay, I'm fine with that. The whole thing fell apart. We never sued Adam Levine. Just thought that was an interesting story. And it's 10 years ago, pretty much this week, that happened, that first episode aired on PBS stations here locally. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Wiggins America. See you next time.
Don't you try and pretend it's my feeling will win and I won't harm you or touch your defenses, vanity, insecurity. Don't you forget about me. Dancing, you know it, baby.
Wiggins America.
Take you apart. I'll put us back together at heart, baby. Don't you forget about me.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.